Hey folks, this is Will, one half of Monster Mondays, just here to let you know that in this episode we'll be talking about Sam Raimi's The Evil Dead. As you normally know if you are a regular listener to the show, we do go over the plot. We don't necessarily go in depth on plot points as we're describing it, but just a content warning here. If you have seen The Evil Dead or if you know of its reputation, there are some rape scenes in the movie, which we do slightly talk about in the context of discussing The Evil Dead. So just a content warning before the episode starts. Enjoy the episode.
I bid you welcome.
I want to play a game.
Stay on the road. Keep clear of the moors.
It can't be bargained with. It can't be reasoned with.
Let them see what kind of a person I am. Why, she wouldn't even harm a fly.
Hello, folks. My name is William.
You'll never introduce yourself as William.
Do it again. I'm feeling very formal and professional
today.
No,
do it again.
Okay. Hey, folks. My name is Will.
My name is Yas.
And welcome to the Monster Monday podcast. This is the podcast where we talk about a horror movie every day of the week, as long as it's not Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And Yas, why do we talk about horror films?
Because the... It's because you look at me.
Well, because I'm asking you a question.
I think it's very rude.
I think it's very rude to not look at someone when you're asking them a question.
Because the monsters in film aren't as scary as the monsters in real life.
And today, I think we've got a bit of a treat for you today. We're going to be talking about 1981's The Evil Dead, directed and written by Sam Raimi, starring Bruce Campbell. And Yas, had you seen The Evil Dead before we watched it to do this episode?
Yes, I have seen it.
Yeah.
I've not seen it for a while, though.
Mm-hmm. Because I don't think I've seen it from beginning to end, ever. Like, until I think I've seen clips of it, seen snippets and scenes, but I haven't watched it beginning to end before we did it for this episode. I know, sacrilegious.
Blasphemy.
I know, especially, I'm that guy who mainly knows Sam Raimi for his Spider-Man movies, which means I'm a very bad horror fan. But the people who are massive horror fans are Sam Raimi and Bruce Campbell. They grew up together, they studied together, they made lots of indie, no-budget, Super 8mm films, and they wanted to make, essentially, a full-length version of a short film they made together called Within the Woods. So they raised money for it, they begged people, they got donations. They weren't able to get the full budget that they wanted for The Evil Dead, but they were still able to raise about $350,000 for the project, which is a lot to normal people, but in Hollywood terms, that is a tiny, minuscule amount of money. They went to an actual dilapidated cabin. They filmed using mostly unknown actors. Sam Raimi was essentially shooting it himself on his own camera. And it was a massively terrible time for everyone involved because they got to suffer a lot in a cabin in the middle of the woods. But without getting into spoilers immediately, let's say that we're going to talk about The Evil Dead. Spoilers from here on out. And Yas, let's go through the plot of The Evil Dead.
The movie opens with a shaky camera moving over a creepy lake in the forest, intercut with a group of five Michigan State University students driving along a quiet road. The students are Ash Williams, played by Bruce Campbell.
Yeah.
His girlfriend, Linda, played by Betsy Baker. His sister, Cheryl, played by Ellen Sandweiss. Friend, Scotty, played by Richard DiManico. And his girlfriend, Shelley, played by Teresa Tilly. Teresa Tilly, I think, was actually credited as Sarah York in the film because she just wanted to come up with, like, a stage name. She didn't want people to know that she was starring in this horror film, essentially, because she'd just been signed to an agent. Anyway, she found out later on it was all illegal, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, there's some great special features, even on the DVD, that go into all this, where she's talking about it, and some of the other actors are talking about it.
The thing is, Teresa Tilly's a pretty good stage name. You've got the alliteration. Like, when you've got a last name like Tello, then I think you come across as quite sweet and innocent. I think that could play well.
I think she said it was something like her sister's name is Sarah, and her favourite place was New York, so that's how you get Seriok.
Oh, that's how you get your porn star name, isn't it?
Who knows?
Hillview Theo, or Theo Hillview, that's my porn star name. Your pet and the street you grew up on.
Your first pet.
Yeah, so it would be Theo Hillview. That would be
for you.
Yeah, that would be my porn star name.
It would be
oh god.
Fluffy Ward Street.
So it'd be Fluffy Ward. Or Fluffy, Ward Fluffy.
Fluffy Ward.
Fluffy Ward is your porn star name.
Yeah. Or Fluffy Second, because I was brought up for a tiny bit on Second Avenue.
Okay. So, Fluffy Avenue.
So it could be yeah, or Fluffy Second.
Oh. Okay, sometimes it doesn't always work.
Yeah, I think Fluffy was the first one as a hamster, albino hamster. And we was told it was a male, and it turned out to be a pregnant female, and she gave birth to 6 babies.
Oh.
And so I was very young at the time, I was like under 5.
Yeah.
And so they had to get like loads of cages for her.
Mm.
But I thought they all just died, but apparently, turns out they were given away.
No. Oh.
According to my dad.
Oh, God. So, yeah, you think you're getting a male, you get a pregnant female, and how old are you, 5 or 6?
No, younger than that.
Okay, so, yeah. So
it was like 4, 5.
So you were very young when you realised that gender was a social construct.
I don't know. I didn't really think much about it.
Yeah.
I just looked at all these cute little babies. Uh-oh. And I remember the mum had red eyes because she's an albino and pure white. And then the baby was pure white but had blue eyes.
No.
And all the other babies had red eyes. But then the mum and baby died not long after.
No.
It was really sad. And that was my first heartbreak.
Oh no. Like, I'm friends with someone who had a cat run away recently. She was gone for 2 days. Came back, pregnant.
Yeah.
And gave birth to about 6 beautiful baby kittens.
Yeah, typical cat.
Oh.
They're consulting a map as the car speeds along towards a large red lorry heading in the opposite direction, as well as the moving camera heading closer and closer to the road. They narrowly avoid colliding with the lorry after the steering wheel locks for a brief moment, despite Ash insisting the car was serviced yesterday. Scotty tests out the horn, inadvertently beeping at some waving fishermen on the side of the road, who proceeds to yell at because he wasn't honking at them. All they did was wave back.
I know, it's not like they're like hailing a ride or anything or being mean to them. And he's like, go to hell, I wasn't honking at you. And I think it was this moment I realised I was not going to like Scotty.
Yeah, Scotty's a dick.
Yeah, like,
spoilers.
Well, because you take notes. You're very professional. You take notes during the viewing of this. And I distinctly remember for the first half of this movie, your one note was Evil Dead 1981, point one, Scotty's a dick.
Yeah.
That was your, like, note.
Pretty much.
for the first half of the movie, that was your note.
The group talk about the cabin that Scotty has rented for the weekend, which he got a great deal on, but they have no idea why it was going for so cheap.
Yeah,
well.
Yeah. I think it's Cheryl who says, like, you've not even looked at the place yet, so that's a bad sign.
The car drives over a rickety old bridge, getting stuck halfway due to the weak woodwork. They park outside a dilapidated, rustic wood cabin in the middle of nowhere, where the porch swing is moving on its own, and it only stops when Scotty opens the front door.
It's actually a little bit funny, because this comically terrible looking cabin with the creepy swinging chair. It's all signs are pointing to get the hell out of there.
Well, it's all the classic horror tropes, but I suppose this was probably like bringing it all together, like the first kind of film where it brings it all properly together.
Yeah, I think definitely at least in the mainstream, because you'd have your terrible exploitation, like, you know, your Cannibal Holocaust and stuff like that, which were relatively cult films, like kind of underground. But yeah, this is the mainstream, from what I can tell, the first Cabin in the Woods movie.
Once inside the misty cabin, Scotty turns the lights on and looks around as the rest of the students unload the car. Scotty investigates the small shed on the premises, which is full of rusty equipment, including axes, saw blades and more.
When watching this was your point where you'd say, no, get out of there. Going into that terrible, shitty little shed.
Yeah, I was like, turn around. Like, yeah, I'm not going in that dark thing. Mm-hmm. After nightfall, Cheryl is alone drawing a picture of a large ticking clock in the front room. However, when it reaches 5:52, it freezes and starts chiming as a ghostly voice coming from outside, voiced by Sam Raimi, says, join us, Join us.
Join us.
Suddenly, Cheryl's hand becomes possessed, rips off her clock sketch from her book, and starts drawing what looks like a square with a face in the middle. Well, it's actually the book, isn't it?
Mm.
She regains control, and as she puts the book down, she sees a trap door across the room start banging and jolting up and down as if someone is underneath trying to break out.
Mm.
Later that night, as the group have tea, Ash goes to make a toast before being interrupted by the trap door in the front room bursting open. The group stand above the hole, wondering what could have caused it, and Scotty goes down with a torch to investigate. But after a full minute with no sign of movement, Ash takes a lantern and follows him down. Yeah, Scotty's a right dick here.
Mm.
So, I think it's Cheryl. She's like, well, maybe it's just animals, like, trying not to get freaked out.
Mm-hmm.
And then Scotty just, like, laughs in her face and is like, yeah, what animal would do that?
Yeah, wherever I'm going down.
I'm a man, I'm gonna go see what it all is.
Actual dialogue. I'm a man, I'm going.
Oh, he's a dick.
Yeah, Scotty is a dick.
However, Ash is really cool.
Yeah, Ash is cool.
He's a nice character. Mm. I liked him. Ash opens the door in the basement and investigates the dark room. Gets spooked out by Scotty, who leaps out to scare him. Oh, ha ha ha.
Mm. I'd say you're 20. You're probably in your early 20s.
In the basement, Scotty has found a small workstation with a rifle, empty cartridges, a dagger made of animal bones, a tape recorder, and a creepy book with a howling face sculpted on the cover with demonic writing inside. I'm sorry, but if you see that, I'm running out of there. I ain't investigating.
No, especially when he's got a partially torn The Hills Have Eyes poster on the wall as well in the background.
Yeah, I noticed that. They take all of the equipment upstairs as a bolt of lightning strikes a tree outside, transitioning us to sometime later that night. Or they listen to the tape recordings from downstairs. No! Just don't do it! Just don't listen to anything.
Well,
don't open anything and leave it.
Well, fun trivia. I think they were going to try and be much more calm when listening to the cassette tape because they were going to be all smoking marijuana. And because they decided they wanted this to be more of a real experience, they decided to actually smoke marijuana and get really, really high, but they couldn't film anything because the cast were just having too much fun and were out of control. So they had to come back to the scene another day once everyone had cooled off, basically. Once the effect of the weed had dissipated.
It has been a number of years since I began excavating the ruins of Kandar with a group of my colleagues. Now my wife and I have retreated to a small cabin in the solitude of these mountains. Here I continued my research, undisturbed by the myriad distractions of modern civilization and far from the groves of Akademe. I believe I have made a significant find in the Kandarian runes, a volume of ancient Sumerian burial practices and funerary incantations. It is entitled Naturan de Manto, roughly translated Book of the Dead. The book is bound in human flesh and inked in human blood. It deals with demons, demon resurrection, and those forces which roam the forest and dark bowers of man's domain. The first few pages warn that these enduring creatures may lie dormant, but are never truly dead. They may be recalled to active life through the incantations presented in this book. It is through recitation of these passages that the demons are given license to possess the living.
Cheryl turns off the tape, much to Scotty's dismay. And she's getting really scared here, and he's just, like, gaslighting her into thinking she's being stupid.
Yeah, well, he's proper laughing in her face. He gets right up close to her as well, and it's like, ha 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 ha. And, yeah, I hate Scotty.
He fast-forwards the tape to where the archaeologist starts chanting a summoning spell, which the audience sees start to revive some sort of spirit outside of the cabin. Cheryl screams for Scotty to turn off the tape, and a tree falls over outside, breaking through a window nearby. It's pretty scary.
Mm.
If that happened, you'd trick yourself.
Yeah, but there's a bit of a recurring issue I have with this film where that exact same window gets smashed about 3 or 4 times over the course of the film, but whenever they go back to it, it's completely fixed. It's something that actually gets quite distracting because when they shut the doors to try and keep the spirits out, why don't they just go through the broken window?
Oh, all right. Sheesh. It's just a film.
It's just an Evil Dead.
Just a film.
Just a film.
Ash yells at Scotty for taking the joke too far, but Scotty doesn't see what the big issue was. Later that night, Ash pretends to sleep on the sofa as Linda tries to steal a small jewellery box he's holding, which contains a necklace.
This was funny. It's like a game of, I don't know what you'd call it, a game of peekaboo? I don't know if that's it. But when he's pretending to sleep and they're trying to catch each other with their eyes open in the act.
The two romantically kiss as an unseen figure is watching them from outside the cabin. Oh. It is a very sweet scene.
But
it is a very strange necklace.
It's like a little
magnifying glass.
Yeah, like an eyeglass, magnifying glass thing. It's never seen. Like, there's no actual reason for it to be designed like that practically in the film. It's a weird necklace. I think if I gave that to you, you'd be like, "Oh, thanks. I'll put it in my drawer because it's so special, and I don't want anything to happen to it, and I'll never wear it."
Yeah, well, I wouldn't be surprised. You don't have the best track record of presents.
I'll have you know, that scarf and hat were very practical for the winter.
Yeah, but it was my 21st birthday.
Yeah, you can get cold on your birthday.
The camera, from a first-person perspective, moves around the outside of the cabin, catching a cheeky glimpse of Scotty and Shelley getting undressed before moving to the outside of Cheryl's room. It whispers, "Join us," prompting Cheryl to go outside alone to investigate. "I'm sorry, no. I'm here and join us. I ain't coming out to see you."
Yeah, bad call, no, bad move.
Nope, not happening. She wanders into the forest as clouds cover up the moon and calls out whoever is there. It quickly responds by manipulating the roots and branches of nearby trees, crawling up Cheryl's legs and wrapping tight around her wrists and neck. Cheryl tries to break free as the branches start ripping off her dressing gown and clothes underneath, pulling her down to the floor, force her legs open, and Cheryl is raped. This is quite possibly the worst scene in the film.
Yeah, this is the scene.
Everybody kind of knows about the tree rape scene.
Yeah, this is the scene that even Sam Raimi thought, okay, I might have gone too far here, and he didn't put it in the sequel. It's in the remake, which Sam Raimi produced, which was quite surprising. But this is
and it's really bad in the remake. Like, it's really graphic. Yeah. Like, really bad.
Yeah, but this is definitely graphic for late 70s, early 80s standards in cinema. But yeah, because at first you can just kind of maybe interpret it as she's being wrestled and attacked by the branches. But it's not. You get this shot, this top-down shot, looking down, where her legs are being spread open. And with that moment, it becomes very clear what's going
to
happen.
But she didn't know what was going to happen. So all that happened to her, the actress. And then, so they filmed that. But the bit where the big stick comes down and, actually penetrates her is done post-filming. And she didn't know that was happening until she saw it in the cinema screen with her mum sitting next to her.
Oh, God.
Yeah. That's pretty...
That's pretty bad. Because another character gets attacked by the trees later, but it's completely off screen. And it's not implied that they got a similar treatment. Like, they got attacked and beaten up, but yeah, it seems like the assault of this nature only happens to Cheryl, which is kind of messed up. Yeah, it's horrifying viewing, and it is a horror film, but it's still, even to this day, what, over 40 years later, it's nearly 40 years later, it's still quite unnerving to watch.
Cheryl manages to wrestle free and runs away from the spirit, chasing her. It's kind of cool because you see the spirit as the camera's POV, so that's quite cool to show it that way. So we don't actually see, the spirits or anything. It's just this really cool chase sequence, which helps build up the scariness. Like, it is quite a scary film. Like, looking back on it with, 20 eyes. Admittedly, it's not terrifying, but if you was watching it in the 80s, I reckon you'd be terrified.
Yeah, absolutely. And I like the camera movements as well. Whenever the camera goes into that mode, it's always Sam Raimi holding it. And even that first shot at the beginning of the film where it's going over the lake, that's Sam Raimi on a dinghy holding the camera, and Bruce Campbell is actually paddling in the water, pushing the dinghy along. That's how they did those shots.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
It's a really cool film for, it's like one of those films you aspire to in a way. Like, oh, there were just a few young kids, not much budget. They went through really shit time, but they made this film.
Yeah.
And it was like a passion project for everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it just did really well. So it's so inspiring. Mm. It's like one of the films you think, well, Sam Raimi did it, like, yeah, fresh out of college.
Yeah, and it seems like it doesn't come across like there was much in terms of ego on set either, which I think would have been a killer for this type of project. But you got someone like Bruce Campbell, who apparently, when it's not even his scene, he would help out. He, like, even if he had a day off, he would come to set, help out. He'd help to dress the sets. He'd help to keep things running smoothly. I also think he mortgaged his house. He mortgaged something in order to fund, like, getting this film made. So he clearly had a lot of stake in it. But he's just, Sam Raimi's best horror buddy, his best friend. And there's a reason Bruce Campbell appears in, I think, almost every single Sam Raimi film, even if it's just a cameo.
She reaches the cabin, but the front door is locked. She bangs on the door, begging for help, but no one answers. She finds a spare set of keys above the door, but is unable to find the right key. Oh, it's quite tense, that scene, isn't it? You're like,
the camera's getting closer and closer. Yeah.
But Ash answers her cries for help and lets her inside, just in the right time.
Oh, go Ash.
Shutting the door and locking the entity outside.
Though the entity could have just used the broken window to get in, but that's neither here nor there.
Shut up.
Okay.
The rest of the group don't believe Cheryl's story of what happened, but she manages to convince Ash to drive her to the nearest town so she can spend the night there.
Oh, Ash is a good egg.
It is his sister.
Mm-hmm.
The car struggles to start, but eventually it does. It's not long before Ash stops to investigate something outside on the road, and Cheryl tries to follow him and discovers that the frail bridge they drove over has been destroyed. There is no escape.
Oh no.
They're trapped.
They're trapped and won't let us leave.
The next day, Ash listens to the tape recordings where the archaeologist explains that he believes his wife has been possessed by a demon and the only way to destroy it is by dismembering the host. Meanwhile, Linda is trying to guess the playing card number and suit that Shelley draws from a deck, and while she's completely wrong, Shelley plays along. However, Cheryl, who is looking out a window nearby, manages to call out all the cards as they're drawn from the deck. That's pretty spooky.
Yeah.
She turns around and her face is grey with pure white eyes and a demonic voice. She's floating in the air. She vows to kill them all before dropping to the floor unconscious.
Why have you disturbed our sleep? Awakened us from our ancient slumber. You will die! Like the others before you. One by one, we will take you.
It's an interesting makeup design, isn't it?
Yeah, so I watched special features on this and I was really intrigued by it because, like, I love my makeup effects, obviously.
Yeah.
And, not going to lie, they're not the best in this film. I'm sure what they did with the budget, and it was one guy doing all these effects, so hats off to him. He was amazing.
Mm.
What was his name? Tom Sullivan, I think?
I'll try and get the name for you, but I think that's it.
His name is Tom Sullivan. And, yeah, hats off to him. But he did say, like in this documentary thing, you know, he wishes he would have done things a bit differently. He was like, just putting, like, acrylic paint on actors' faces and stuff like that instead of, like, actual makeup. Mm-hmm. and like, doing all the effects and stuff. There's some really cool stop-motion stuff later on.
Yeah.
But the actual makeup is, like, it's not the best.
Yeah, yeah.
At the time. But he did as good a job as he could have done at that time. And the eye contacts were, like, they fit the whole eye instead of just over the pupil. So the actors were actually blind whilst wearing them.
Yeah, apparently the contact lenses were as thick as glass and they take 10 minutes to apply, but they could only be on for 15 minutes at a time, otherwise the eyes couldn't breathe.
Oh, you won't be able to do that nowadays.
Yeah, yeah. Bruce Campbell later commented that to get the effect of wearing these lenses, they essentially were putting Tupperware over their eyes.
Yeah, it's bad. There's massive health and safety regulations now.
Yeah.
Like, you would be breaking the law to do that now.
Yeah, you need a licensed optician to do it, don't you?
Yeah, yeah. You do, yeah. Well, it's your eyes. It's dangerous. Well, yeah. Anything could go wrong. Mm. But anyway, like, some of the effects were great, but obviously looking back, they are quite dated. But for the time that it was. Mm. It was amazing.
Yeah.
Maybe don't use acrylic paint on people because it's definitely hard to get off. And he said, like, oh, he regrets it because, like, obviously they had to scrub the actors' faces, mm-hmm. so that's not very nice yeah. for them either.
But there's a few shots when Cheryl is possessed and she's, like, it looks like her face is decaying. And you can tell that she's wearing a mask because of, like, the lines from, like, just underneath the eyes to where the mask starts. But I think if you were to watch this film in, like, high definition and in... or even on DVD where it's been restored, you kind of might lose something. If you watch it in VHS, if you watch it in the original film print, those seams might not be as obvious, and it might be even freakier, like maybe the lower budget, the lower clarity you watch it in.
Yeah, but I think like this kind of film, it is low budget, so I think the effects add to that. I think it's quite nice. You don't want like those stunning, amazing... Well, I don't know. I just think it kind of works with the film.
Yeah, it works because everything surrounding the film is also, like, dirt cheap and being improvised. Everyone's winging everything. Yeah. So it kind of all melds together in a good way.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, like acrylic paint on skin.
Yeah, poor actors. But there are some amazing effects, but we'll get into those later on.
Yeah, some really good ones.
And Tom Sullivan, he actually did it all on his own. He was making all the moulds on his own, mm-hmm. all the sculpting on his own, you name it. He did everything on his own. Yeah. So hats off to him. Like, that's amazing.
Yeah, I think overall...
Like, he had a lot to do there.
I think the crew is only comprised of, like, 13 to 14 people.
Yeah, it wasn't a big crew, was it?
Yeah, well, good thing it wasn't a big
crew.
And
they all stayed in, like, one cabin together, didn't they?
They stayed in the cabin they were filming in.
Yeah.
Ooh. With no plumbing, so sometimes the actors wouldn't shower for days.
Yeah, how uncomfortable is that?
And in order for Bruce Campbell to shower at the end of particularly gory, messy days, he was put at the back of a pickup truck because he was so covered in blood he couldn't be inside the vehicle. So he's just in the holding area of a pickup truck being driven to the nearest town so he could shower.
Anyway, back to the plot.
Back to the Evil Dead.
Linda goes to check on Cheryl. But she wakes up, grabs a nearby pencil and stabs Linda in the ankle and backhands her across the room. This effect. Oh!
The ankle, yes.
It just gets everybody, I think. The way they just stab this pencil mm-hmm. in and drag it. Everybody feels that effect. Yeah. And I think it's really, really good. I think it's really well done as well.
Yeah, it's because it's not a supernatural... It's a supernatural film, but this isn't a supernatural injury. Someone could just stab you in the ankle with a pencil. And I think that... Oh, it's so tactile.
Yeah, it's definitely cringeworthy.
Yeah.
In a good way.
Yeah.
She grabs Ash by the face and throws him into a nearby shelf. Poor Ash, he gets loads of shelves on him.
Yeah, this happens two or three times in the film. He gets thrown at a shelf, the shelf falls on him, and he struggles to pick up the shelf to help his friends. He's trapped underneath the unit.
Scotty manages to hit Cheryl on the head with the handle of an axe and kicks her down the trapdoor, which they close and chain it shut. But she can still, like, lift it up a bit and get her hands out and, talk and look. Oh, she looks so creepy in that trapdoor. That's very, very creepy.
It's not creepy when she's being hit into the trapdoor because it's obviously a dummy that's, like, on some sort of spring. That would be a fun punching bag, though. Ones that are meant to, like, spring back at you.
And there are some, like, bits where you can tell that it's just a really badly made dummy because it just, like, the way it's thrown or, like, whatever, flies in the air. It's really funny. But I think it all works.
Yeah, well, a lot of this film kind of gets away with the slapstick because it's one of Sam Raimi's big influences are the Three Stooges. Like, he takes his comedy cues from that sort of silent era, physical comedy era than anything else. And that comes across in so much of his work.
Later that night, the group try to decide on what to do next. While Cheryl is locked in the basement, the trapdoor does open a few inches, allowing her to reach her hand out and peer through the gap to watch them. Creepy little witch.
Yeah, this seems like almost entirely from the first-person perspective underneath the trapdoor. It's really good.
Yeah. The spirit once again spies on the remaining group from outside before stopping at Shelley's room. It smashes through the window and attacks her. Scotty goes to investigate the screams, but finds the room empty.
No,
that's not a good sign.
Nope.
He looks out of the now broken window and finds nothing until he hears something stirring from a nearby wardrobe covered by a curtain. He holds onto the curtain, pulls it back, and there's nothing there. He then spots a nearby wooden door that's slightly ajar.
Probably should have tried that first.
He goes inside. And it's a bathroom with a shower curtain at the back. He draws it back. Nothing. Oh, these are all done to... Mm. It's like a little getting ready for the cattle prod.
Yeah. Like,
He turns around and a hand grabs him by the neck and another hand with a sharp red nail starts scratching his face. Yeah, it's quite gross, this bit. Like, she's just like...
There's some really nasty scratches in this film.
Yeah. A possessed Shelley leaps onto Scotty, who falls back into the living room where Ash is waiting. Scotty, with no help from Ash, manages to throw Shelley off him and into the fireplace. However, Scotty can't bear to see Shelley's face burning on the fire, so he drags her off. Which the demonic Shelley is thankful.
Yeah, and then I'll play the clip in the podcast of her saying, "Oh, thank you, and I know what I couldn't have done if I was on those hot coals." I don't think I should put the clip in. I think I should just just do my impression.
Put you saying it in, and then play the real clip. Please, that was so funny. As the
thank you. I don't know what I would have done if I had remained on those hot coals, burning my pretty flesh. You have pretty skin. Get to our
As the possessed Cheryl cheers on from beneath the trapdoor, Ash tries to fight off Shelley, who throws him back into another shelf. Shelley starts pushing Scotty closer and closer to the fire, as well as picking up the nearby dagger found in the basement to stab him with. But Scotty takes out a knife that he's been carrying in a pouch around his waist.
Yeah, this isn't set up, like, this is nitpicking, absolutely. But we've never seen this pouch before. We've never seen him use this knife prior to this moment in the film. Yeah, this is a nitpick.
He stabs Shelley in the wrist, so her hand is just hanging off. Shelley responds to this by tearing off her hand with her teeth. It's pretty gross.
I love the sound effects
and
as well.
It's so, like, it's so batshit crazy.
Like, I know you've been vegetarian for a long time, but I've only been vegetarian for a couple of years. But I, like, it...
Four
years. But this, like, the sound effects, they sound like if you chew a chicken bone.
Ew.
Yeah, and you can, like, hear it, and you can hear it in your face. But that's what this sound effect felt like as she was biting into her own hand. It was... Well, that actually made us jump.
I actually physically jumped.
You did. You jolted up. Oh my god!
Oh, that shit me up. That's gonna stay in.
Oh boy.
Right, trying to go see what it was.
I've got to get up.
Oh my god.
Okay, 2 sec.
Oh, thank you. I don't know what I would have done on those hot coals. Oh, what was it? Oh, it's for me. Oh, I know what this is. It's the Dark Place DVD.
Oh, Gareth Marenghi's.
Dark Place.
Is it? Gareth Marenghi's Dark Place.
Yes.
Yay!
Because he ordered it from Amazon, but it's a third-party seller.
Yeah.
There we go.
Check, it's got a disc in it.
Ah, it's got bees!
You sounded like Matt Berry then.
That was the idea, thank you. This is all staying in.
No, it's not.
Okay, there we go.
Okay, so the thing that just made us jump was a postman posting something through our letterbox, and it was a DVD that we ordered, and it is Garth Marenghi's Dark Place.
Yeah.
Which some friends introduced us to, and it is so funny. So if you get a chance to check that out on 4OD, go for it.
Mm-hmm. Or be like me and watch it on 4OD and buy the DVD anyway.
Anyway, back to the plot.
Yes, okay, I'll try and sit that down again. I threw my back out yesterday, so this may take half an hour.
That's not staying in.
Yes, it is.
No, it's not. I've never actually eaten chicken off a bone, I don't think. No. I've not eaten meat in what must be, like, how old am I? 12 years?
Yeah.
12, 13... No, actually, it must be like...
Do I hear 14? Do I hear 15?
Yeah, it must be like 14 years I've not eaten meat for.
Yeah.
Or any sort of, like, gelatin product or anything. So I have absolutely no idea... Unfortunately, it's the hand that was holding the dagger, which Scotty then picks up and stabs her with, apparently killing her. but not before it leaks a bunch of bodily fluids everywhere. Oh, this was gross. Yeah. It was the white stuff that freaked me out.
Yeah, it's some weird pus.
I'm fine with blood and guts and gore, but... Bleh.
Yeah, it's like her hand, her wrist stump starts firing some weird white pus. She's got stuff coming out of her mouth. It's all, yeah.
Scotty goes to check on the body, but Shelley uses her remaining hand to grab hold of him, prompting Scotty to drop all her limbs off with an axe as Ash was unwilling to do it. Despite all of her limbs and body parts being separated, Shelley is still alive with all her body parts twitching, so Scotty decides to bury her.
Mm.
It's very good, this, and you just see them all, like, twitching like... Bleh.
Yeah, it's like a medium-wide shot of just all of the body parts on the floor, just slowly twitching.
They bundle all of her body parts into a blanket, take her out into the forest, and bury Shelley. While Linda sleeps, she apparently slept through the whole entire thing. She must be a heavy sleeper.
She must sleep like me.
Yeah. Scotty suggests trying to find a way out of the forest other than the bridge. Ash refuses to leave without Linda as she can't walk on her injured ankle, so Scotty goes out into the forest alone. That's not a good idea.
No, he shouldn't have done that.
Ash goes to check on Linda, but sees her ankle wound slowly turn black and start spreading up the rest of her body. Mm. Linda leaps up from the bed and with possessed white eyes, causing Ash to run out the front door, where he's leapt upon by an injured Scotty. He's covered in cuts and bruises, and Ash carries him inside as a possessed Linda sat cross-legged on the floor, just sits and laughs at them. Oh my god, this bit. She's really disturbing.
Yeah, it's
really
creepy.
Like this maniacal laugh, but it's like a childlike laugh, and she's just like singing and repeating and stuff. And in the documentary that I watched, the actress actually talks about this, and apparently she was sat around with the crew and just started like giggling like a little girl and like doing this weird sing-song thing, and everybody found it so creepy that they decided to use that in the film. So that's why she's like all creepy childlike, because who isn't scared by like creepy children?
Yeah, and she does it really, really well. Yeah, it's not just a creepy effect, she completely sells it.
Scotty says that Cheryl was right and whatever is attacking them won't let them leave, and that there's a trail out of the forest, but the trees are alive. Linda and Cheryl start laughing and taunting Ash, who proceeds to smack Linda across the face several times.
Yeah, this is the one scene that Bruce Campbell himself says that he regretted doing in the original film, where he is essentially, kind of for laughs as well, just backhanding Linda multiple times across the face. I've been looking up at... Bruce Campbell's autobiography, If Chins Could Kill, Confession of a B-Movie Actor. And yeah, he talks a lot about the behind the scenes and the making of this film, and he says that this slapping scene was the one thing he regretted doing.
Scotty tells Ash he needs to kill Linda, so he takes the rifle and holds it to her head, but Linda drops her head down, lifts it back up, and appears that she's no longer possessed.
Mm.
Don't
do it.
She pleads for help, and the two embrace, only to be interrupted by Cheryl's voice coming from the basement saying that she's all right now. Ash walks over to the trapdoor to unlock the padlock for the trapdoor, only for Cheryl's arm to burst through the wooden floor beneath him and grab him by the neck.
Mm.
Ash bites her thumb to get free and finds Linda possessed again. She sings a song to taunt Ash, who responds by grabbing her by the legs and dragging her outside and leaving her there.
Yeah, the original script for this had Linda turn into some sort of weird creature as she was being dragged across the floor, but they couldn't afford it, so she is just being dragged across the floor and laughing. So it's actually kind of a funny way how Ash deals with this issue. Just drag her out, leave her outside and shut the door. That would deal with it.
It does for a little bit.
Yeah.
So it works for a while.
Exactly. But I like the timing of this when Linda's like, oh, I'm not possessed anymore. Oh, hold me, Ash. Promise me you'll never let this happen again. And then Cheryl's demon is like, oh, that worked. I'm going to try it now. I'm okay now, Ash. I'm okay. Oh, I'm feeling much better now.
Yeah. Ash fixes Scotty up a drink and promises that they'll get out alive. He tries to feed him the drink, but his body is lifeless. He goes to look out the window, but Linda, having gotten back into the cabin, sneaks up on him and stabs him in the arm with her dagger. She licks the blood off the blade. That was gross.
Unsanitary.
Before going in for another attack, which results in Ash getting pushed back onto the sofa that Scotty was sitting on, knocking his body to the floor. Ash manages to gain the upper hand when he pushes Linda over onto the dagger, stabbing her through the stomach and killing her. He drags a lifeless body to the shed and chains her to the workbench, finding and turning on a bright red chainsaw so he can dismember the corpse.
Yes, Ash and the chainsaw, it just feels right.
However, Linda's body doesn't look possessed anymore, and she's back to her normal looking self, and Ash can't bring himself to chainsaw his girlfriend.
Not only that, like when Linda's possessed form dies, her face is covered in blood, but when she's on the workbench and Ash contemplates dismembering the body, her face is completely clean and clear. During the scene where Ash is about to cut up his girlfriend with a chainsaw, Bruce Campbell actually had to use a real chainsaw and hold it up to the actress's chest. You can see on a close-up of Linda's neck, looking at the necklace, that her pulse is racing.
He carries her out into the forest and starts digging her grave. In the meanwhile, Cheryl manages to break free from the trapdoor in the cabin, which wakes Linda up, revealing herself to be possessed, but she plays dead in front of Ash, who buries her. He even made a wooden cross to put at the head of the grave.
I know, he proper went for it as well. But the scene when he's digging the grave and Linda's opening her eyes, that's a callback to earlier on when he's when they're playing peekaboo with the jewellery, where they're sort of they're trying to catch each other out with their eyes open when Linda's playing dead. It's actually a really funny callback.
Ash goes to pick up the necklace from earlier that he'd taken off her body, but Linda's hand bursts from out the dirt and grabs him. Linda crawls out of the grave and starts scratching at Ash's leg.
Yeah, this is painful.
Causing him to fall over. But he finds a large plank of wood, which he uses to clobber Linda over the head multiple times, though it doesn't seem to have much of an effect.
Yeah, he hits her with this massive plank of wood. It's probably bigger than Ash's, and it doesn't seem to do anything. In fact, the plank actually starts breaking because it's being used to hit Linda so much.
Ash falls backwards on top of the grave, and Linda leaps into the air towards him. But Ash grabs the shovel and slices her head off with it in midair.
Good aim.
This is one of the funny dummy plot points.
Yeah, it just flies across the camera and then lands on top of Bruce Campbell.
However, Linda's head is still alive and laughing as her neck starts gushing blood all over Ash and the headless body tries to rape Ash.
There are sound effects, there are sound effects of her moaning in pleasure, and they added this scene in a way to try and counteract the tree rape scene that they added in.
Oh, right, okay.
So yeah, this is a creative team basically winging it.
But he manages to throw her off and head back into the cabin.
So, a bit of trivia, because once again Bruce Campbell is being covered head to toe in blood. The blood substance they used was like a mixture of sweeteners, red food colouring syrup and stuff like that. And at the end of one day, they put Bruce Campbell's up by the fireplace to dry. And after a few hours, he tried to put it back on, and it shattered.
Ah!
The shirt shattered because it had crystallised, basically, because of the amount of blood on his shirt.
That's funny. A blood-soaked Ash walks inside only to find the trapdoor open and Cheryl gone. He searches in Cheryl's bedroom for her, but before he can check the wardrobe, Cheryl leaps through the broken window and grabs the rifle. He lifts by the rifle and shoots Cheryl in the shoulder.
With live rounds. They use live rounds when filming this scene.
But it doesn't stop her from going around the house to enter through the front door. But Ash manages to close the door on Cheryl's fingers and smacks them with the butt of a gun so he can shut it.
Yeah, once again, she doesn't go through the broken window.
You and this broken window.
I know, but they break it several times over the course of this film, and none of the spirits think, oh, we'll use that as an opening. The reason she's able to grab the rifle in the last scene is because the window had previously been broken. Why does she not go through that window to get in? She's not locked out.
It doesn't really matter.
I know it doesn't matter, and only I care about this, but this is the hill I'm dying on.
Ash runs to the back door to close it as well, and decides to go into the basement and finds that one of the water pipes is wrapped in a blood-soaked shirt. But the shirt rips, causing the pipe to break, spilling gallons and gallons of blood right on top of Ash. The bricks start leaking blood. Blood fills up in the light bulb in the ceiling, and a vinyl player in stop motion starts playing show tunes as a nearby projector turns on and also starts licking blood.
Yeah, this was the last scene that they filmed over the course of the movie, where essentially they had all of this leftover blood and thought, you know what, we're going to use this. But the projector scene in particular is a tribute to Andy Granger, who's a friend of Sam Raimi and Bruce Campbell's, who told them before filming, fellas, I don't know why I've given him that voice, fellas, no matter what you do, keep the blood running down the screen. So that's literally what they do in this projector scene.
As Ash goes to the workbench in the basement and wipes blood off his face and takes more ammo for the gun, The projector blows up, the light bulbs explode, and the music slows down and stops. Ash slowly walks up the basement stairs, back into the cabin living room, where the clock is going haywire. An unseen force comes in through the back door, but Ash manages to close another door, shut in front of it. The window shutters start banging, and Ash looks into a nearby mirror, reaches his hand inside, only for it to go right through like water. He is startled by a noise outside, so he shoots out the window and stands with his back to the front door so he can reload his gun. He takes Linda's necklace out of his pocket, but is interrupted by Cheryl's arms breaking through the front door and grabbing his face. He breaks free and shoots through one of the holes, hitting Cheryl in the mouth.
This is a really cool, nasty gore effect, as you see the bullet rip through her mouth.
He wheels over a desk to barricade the front door, despite there being an open, broken window.
And it's also funny as well, because there's a little blue toolbox on top of the desk. He lightly taps it off and then wheels the desk over. It's just a really funny touch where he just takes this one object off it and then wheels it over.
But Scotty's corpse quickly rises up and leaps at him.
This made you jump. Scotty jumping up in front of the camera, and then he leaps over to Ash. This made you jump when watching it.
Did it? It did. I can't remember.
I mean, the postman made me jump.
Oh, yeah,
earlier,
the postman made me jump. Yeah, so it's more than likely it made me jump.
Yeah, so we're both susceptible to this.
Scotty's corpse quickly rises up and leaps at him. Ash tries to hit him with another desk, but Scotty smacks it away, almost knocking the Book of the Dead into the still-burning fireplace. Scotty lifts Ash up by the neck, but Ash retaliates by ramming his thumbs into Scotty's eyes, blinding him. This is cool.
This is really cool.
It's really gross.
And like really thick red blood comes out of his eyes. Ah.
Ash then rips out a large piece of wood pierced in Scotty's leg, causing him to rapidly bleed out and fall to the floor. Then Scotty's body starts steaming and hissing, and Ash notices the Book of the Dead being singed by the fire. At this moment, Cheryl breaks into the cabin and uppercuts Ash before heading over to the fireplace to get a poker. Ash tries to reach the Book of the Dead, but Scotty, still alive, grabs him by the ankles and pulls him backwards. Ash manages to grab Linda's necklace and uses it as a lasso to retrieve the book and throw it onto the fire.
So the reason that the necklace is designed like that is that the magnifying glass necklace was originally intended to be a plot point by focusing the sunlight to burn the Book of the Dead at the end of the film. But it was decided after shooting that this wasn't going to work, so its actual use in the film was a desperate attempt to keep it relevant since so much time had been spent on it already.
Cheryl and Scotty decompose in stop motion, with even the Book of the Dead sticking its tongue out before seemingly dying in the fireplace.
Yeah, this sequence is brilliant.
Yeah, it's really cool stop motion.
Yeah, like their hair's falling out, their tongues are sticking out everywhere. It's really cool.
Then large demonic clawed hands burst out from the corpses and Cheryl's body falls over and explodes upon hitting the ground, splashing more blood onto Ash. A voice repeatedly says, "Join us," but fades away. It's dawn, and Ash, covered head to toe in blood, goes outside. Uplifting music starts playing. Birds can be heard singing, and it appears that everything is back to normal. Oh. The last shot of the movie has the camera from the perspective of the unseen entity, charging through the forest, rushing through the cabin, bursting the front doors open, and attacking Ash, who screams out, and we cut to credits as the Charleston starts playing.
So this last shot was done by mounting a camera onto a tripod, then mounting that tripod onto a motorbike and driving it through the forest and then through the cabin and deliberately running into Bruce Campbell. Bruce Campbell apparently broke several ribs on impact.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's tough.
That is tough. So that's a one-take wonder thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll get it right straight away.
So, I mean, would you break several ribs for your director friend? I don't know. I think
no.
Probably not. But yeah, that's The Evil Dead.
So what did you think after your first viewing?
So I thought that the last 20 minutes was spectacular. Everything with Ash on his own fighting the demons. Once all of the supporting cast have been possessed and have become more fun and more tolerable to watch. I think from when he goes down to the basement where it starts leaking blood everywhere up until the ending of the film are amazing. And I think it's where everyone's on the top of their game. Bruce Campbell's a great screen presence. Sam Raimi's direction is so inspired. Like, there's an amazing shot where it's like on from the roof, from the rafters, following Ash as he's walking from one side to the other, and there's this weird warp sound whenever it passes a beam in the rafter. The whole last 20 minutes are incredible. I think everything leading up to it has its moments, but I wasn't a fan of really the characters. Even Bruce Campbell in the first two-thirds of the film, I didn't think they were that good. But I think it is enjoyable. A really enjoyable horror film, and the last 20 minutes blew my mind.
Yeah, I always enjoy watching it. It's a horror classic. It's just going to be one of them films, even though like the effects are not up to today's standards, it's still just a really enjoyable film.
Yeah.
You can enjoy it. And it is genuinely quite a spooky film. I think there's an interview, I think it's Greg Nicotero, in the documentary, and he's been interviewed. And I think he maybe did the makeup effects for one of the other films or something.
Yeah.
And he's just like sort of saying, you know, I think this film would be, if it had a higher budget and more of it was spent on the effects, it would be a terrifying film, almost as terrifying as The Exorcist. And, you know, I have to agree, like, there's some really scary elements in it. And I think the fact that it's low budget does help create this scare. But if the effects were a little bit better, should we say? Mm. I mean, they did the best that they could do.
Yeah.
And he did an amazing job with what he could do.
Yeah.
But I think I have to agree, it would be just that much scarier if it was, like, still on par with today. But it's still just a fun film to watch, isn't it? It's every horror fan's, like, every horror fan just has to watch it.
Yeah, but when you say that about the effects, it still horrified audiences at the time. It was actually banned in certain countries, including the UK. It was labelled as a video nasty and was banned from distribution in the UK for several years. But it did quite well on the indie circuit. It was, though, I think Sam Raimi or someone who Sam Raimi knew were friends with the owner of the Cannes Film Festival, so it was okay to play there. And critics originally did not like or respond well to the film. They were like, yeah, this is terrible, it's just luck. But then Stephen King comes along and says, yeah, it's one of the top five films I've seen all year. And then critics were like, oh, Evil Dead's a wonderful film. They only kind of came out when Stephen King endorsed the film and labelled it as like one of the most original horror films he's seen in a long time. Which kind of, like, hashtag not all festival critics, but, you know, many festival critics, because kind of try and ride on popularity and things like that. But yeah, and when it had its premiere, it did really, really well. Sam Raimi was known for emulating publicity stunts from the 50s and 60s. He would hire ambulances to wait outside of movie theatres in case people fainted. He didn't expect anyone to faint, but the appearance of them being there would help to drum up anticipation and excitement for the film. So he was quite a showman.
Well, it works. Mm. I mean, look at him now.
Exactly, yeah. And
when the film is like a cult classic.
Yeah, and I think the sequel, Evil Dead 2, is significantly better. And I even think the remake is better as well. Like, not just because of the effects and stuff, but I like the characters more in the remake. But it's still this one for what it was. A bunch of guys in their late teens, early 20s coming together. Like, Sam Raimi made this film before he was 20 years old.
Yeah, like, it's amazing.
Yeah, it's that sort of energy and enthusiasm and love for the genre with such unconventional inspirations. Like, you know, the Three Stooges is where he gets his comedic inspirations from. And you can see, as weird as the connection is, you can see why this guy was so perfect to direct Spider-Man 20 years later, because of how he brings that energy to the camera. I love Sam Raimi as a filmmaker, but I'm ashamed that I hadn't seen Evil Dead all the way through before this podcast.
So you should be.
I am ashamed, but I've rectified this. I'm now one of the good horror fans. Yeah, you can put me on that list now.
So a little bit of trivia for you. At the end of principal shooting in Tennessee, the crew put together a little time capsule package and buried it inside the fireplace of the cabin as a memento for the production. So whoever found it, the cabin has since been destroyed and only the fireplace is still intact.
Yeah, because they really did film in an actual cabin in the woods, and sometimes they'd be filming and dog walkers would come along. But yeah, that's a nice little thing. I hope whoever found it got some great joy out of it and it wasn't really, really haunted. So that was 1981's The Evil Dead. I hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, please leave us a review or leave us some feedback or thoughts of your own in regards to the movie. You can get in touch with us on our social media pages. And yes, what are those social medias?
Twitter is at MonsterMonPod.
Mm-hmm.
And our Instagram is MonsterMondayPod.
So there should be links or at least things that you can copy and paste in the podcast description on whatever service you're using. I'm trying to get us on Stitcher at time of recording. I think we might be on there by now, but if not, we'll let you folks know. So thanks so much for listening to this podcast. Hope you have a fantastic week. Oh, we forgot to spin the wheel.
Oh,
we've got to spin the wheel.
Spin the wheel for next week's movie.
So this is for next week's movie. Let's make sure the volume's up on the laptop. There we go.
That was a close
call. Was so close. Okay.
So the winner is Get Out.
We're going to be watching Get Out next week. It nearly landed, spoilers, it nearly landed on Texas Chainsaw Massacre. But for the next episode, we'll be talking about Jordan Peele's Get Out. So thanks so much for listening. My name is Will.
My name is Yaz.
And thanks for listening to the Monster Monday podcast. We'll see you next week.
Bye. Bye.
Pretty flesh.